everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting on the Land of Israel Network, live from Jerusalem to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are. Shalom, and welcome to all of you. So wonderful to be back with you here. Last week was on vacation, and I'm going to talk a little bit about what it's like to take a vacation in the Land of Israel in just a few minutes. First part of the show today, I am alone. It's just me and you. It's just me and you for a little bit. And then we're going to be speaking with lawyer Mark Zell, international law, head of an organization that's pro-Republican here in the Land of Israel. And we're going to be talking to him about a very interesting case that he just won, another lawfare case against Israel. And here at the beginning of the show, it's just me and you. We're going to talk about two things today. First thing is, right, the Yishai Fleischer Show. We're here usually with Rabbi Mike talking about the Torah portion. We are in the Torah portion of Ki Tetzé, which is as you go out to war. And it's chapter 21 of the book of Deuteronomy, the book of Dvarim. This is Moses' speech. And we've shifted gears here in the last two Torah portions. We've shifted away from the narrative of retelling the Exodus and all the problems in the desert. Rather now, this is the mitzvah monologue. What happens now is that Moses is going to go through a long soliloquy of the most condensed Torah commandments that there are anywhere to be found in the Bible. There's going to be just a litany list of like, do, don't do, don't do, don't do. This is the way, this is the law. And Moses is going to set down the law. Moses is, of course, a great lawgiver. But when we start in this Torah portion, there's something very strange, and that is we learn about the woman of beautiful form. And here's how it goes. When you go out to war against your enemies, and Hashem, your God, will deliver them into your hand, and you will capture its captivity, you win. And you know, along the way, you end up having to catch some people, take them captive. Right? That's what happens in war. You don't want to kill everybody. And there, the verse continues, and you will see amongst its captivity a woman who is beautiful of form, and you will desire her. You will take her to yourself for a wife. You shall bring her, right? That's what it says. You're going to take her as an actual wife. You're going to bring her into the midst of your house, and she shall shave her head and let her nails grow. You shall remove the garment of her captivity. She shall remove the garment of her captivity from upon herself and sit in your house, and she shall weep for her father and mother for a full month. Thereafter, you may live with her, and she shall be your wife. But it shall be that if you do not desire her, then you shall send her on her way, but you may not sell her for money. You shall not enslave her because you have afflicted her. So here is a very troubling part of, some people are troubled by it in any case, certainly in today's society. It's a little bit strange to see a system of law basically giving you a right to take a wife, a captive. Are we talking about some kind of official licensed rape? Most commentators understand that it is not, that in fact you have to really betroth her, and you're taking her out of her normal situation. And she there's a difference of opinion as to whether you can have carnal relations with her, the soldier can have relations with her as he first sees her, or more likely that he has to bring her back home, give her a full month to kind of cry. He has to see her in her kind of more dilapidated state, seemingly. And then if he indeed betroths her, then he can marry her and have relations, etc. And the commentators, you know, all struggle, and Jewish people struggle in general with this segment, because they say, you know, is this a license to do something inappropriate? And the standard response is that indeed it is a license to do something inappropriate, but better that it be licensed as opposed to you succumbing to some kind of desire that you cannot overcome, and you're going to do it the wrong way. Here the Torah is going to prescribe to you, if you're going to have to do this deed, then how to do it in the proper way. Now, if you take the view that the Torah is also a document of its time, then this is actually quite progressive. It's quite progressive. And the reason it's so progressive is because at that time, people, you know, in conflict and war would rape and kill. And we even see it in our time, right? Here, there's immediately a set of rights that this woman gets. You have to bring her to your house. You have to actually marry her in a full way. You have to give her time to mourn, etc. and let her become part of your household and all that. And she is a full wife. She's not some kind of, you know, just rape victim, but in fact is in your life, and you have to bring her home. And that's the only way that the Torah is going to give you license to take this captive, beautiful woman and do what you want, right? So on the one hand, it's very progressive. On the other hand, still, some people would say, well, you know, it doesn't really fit today's standards. And then you could give them the argument that it's a document for its time. And then there is another view on this, and I wanted to discuss that view. And I discuss it, I try to discuss this most years, and that is the view of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. And I'm going to take this to a kind of, a little bit of a humorous place. You wouldn't think that this woman of beautiful form and this question of quasi-rape or whatever it is that's going on here, or this taking of women in captivity, in any case, into her household, which I think is the more correct understanding of this, you wouldn't think there would be anything humorous. But I want to say, you know, one surprising thing and one humorous thing. And the Or HaChaim's view on this is the surprising view. Check out what he says. He says basically the following. Do you think that a Jewish soldier who is in the height of one of the most holy things that a person could do, which is to fight the wars of God for Israel and to defend Israel, and he comes into some, you know, some foreign place, and so what on his mind is rape? Heaven forbid, heaven forfend, that you could come to such a conclusion. Rather, something very different is happening here. What's actually happening is that the soldier has holy eyes because he's on a holy mission, and he's so fully charged up with this mission that he's doing to rid the world of evil, to fight God's wars, to fight for the rights of Israel. And he sees there a beautiful woman, and something in his sense tells him that she's actually a trapped Jewish soul in this body of an enemy of Israel. And he sees the beauty in her. He sees that she actually needs to come over to our nation. And he brings her home. He makes that unilateral decision to bring her home. And when he brings her home, she kind of goes through the process of shedding her former identity. But then her real, true nature is revealed. And that is that she is a woman of beautiful form. She was supposed to be part of the nation of Israel. And this holy soldier goes on this holy mission, and he's supposed to be killing people and fighting, and yet he stops and sees a thing of beauty. He sees a nitzotz, a spark of beauty in what she has inside. And he doesn't see the externality; he sees the internality, and he's able to resuscitate, to extract her from that place, and to bring her into the real. To fulfill that real potential that she has to be something holy. So that's a very different take on Eshet Yifat Torah, on the woman of beautiful form. I want to tell you about how sometimes I take this to a different level. And that is in the relationship that I have with America. Now, we all know that the United States, part of the ethos of the United States is this materialism. And materialism can be bad. It could be taken to a place of emptiness, a place of really worship of money, etc., and ownership of possessions. But sometimes when I'm on a mission for Hebron, for Israel, for Jerusalem, out there in anywhere outside of the land of Israel, but let's call it America for this discussion, and I go into like a super Target, right? I'm on like on a 7-day rushed mission to take care of some business. In America, teach, raise money, fight, whatever it is. But I have, you know, an hour, and I want to bring something home for my wife and kids. I go into the super Target, right? I go into the super Target because I'm such a soldier that I need a Target. And I go into the super Target. And here in Israel, we're used to being Targets. So it's just so natural to go into the Target. And I go into not just the Target. I go into the super Target because it's a super Target. I go in there, and I put on those holy eyes of a soldier, and I look at all the stuff in the super Target, and I say, who's coming with me? Which one of you possessions, which one of you material things wants to merit to come into the land of Israel? Which one of you wants to be a clothing for a Jewish child in the land of Israel. Which one of you pieces of workout equipment wants to come with me to the land of Israel to strengthen a Jewish body so that we can be better defenders and live a long and healthy life to teach, to learn God's Torah, to teach God's Torah, to fulfill the mitzvah of settling the land of Israel? Which one of you? Which one of you knickknacks wants to adorn a Jewish home in the land of Israel? Yes, there's an element that I have to fight materialism. But at this moment right now, the holy eyes of a Jewish soldier can find the thing that you need to bring to the land of Israel and make it greater, make it stronger. Do you see the nitzotz, that spark in some material product in America? And of course, that's also true about fellow Jews. Sometimes, you know, you go in front of an audience and you want to talk with them, and you don't want to hit the Aliyah message too strong because it'll be turning off to a lot of people. But there's a guy or there's a gal, and you're like, you, I could see. And they usually come up to you and they kind of start ask questions, and you're like, you got to come with me to the land of Israel. I got to pull you out of here. I got to help pull you out of here, and I got to connect you to the Land of Israel Network, or to Nefesh B'Nefesh, or Techelet. That's one of our sponsors, right? Techelet.com, that's the blue string, T-E-K-H-E-L-E-T.com, you know, of the Murex trunkalized snail that makes you into a holy Jew wherever you are, and certainly will pull you into the Land of Israel. And that's we got to be able to see that in our time, that we're part of this great thing, and we got a part of this great thing called Shivat Zion, the return to Zion. That's my new term, instead of Zionism. It's a very old term. It's the term from the Psalms, Shivat Zion, the return to Zion. And we got to pull out all kinds of sparks, Jews, and how about Gentiles? I'll never forget that I was speaking in Arizona. I was at my good friend Pinchas' house and my good friend Arthur's house, and I was speaking at an event there at the JCC, and a Gentile comes up to me, a goy, a Christian. He comes up to me and he says to me, "You see this? I have the Red Alert app on my phone, so that any time." I said to him, "Why? What's the point? This app is made to let you know if you're living in Ashkelon or someplace next to Gaza, or in the north, that a rocket is on its way inbound to Israel and we should take cover." He says, "That's right. I want to know when Israel's under attack so I could pray for it." And right there, I saw that spark. I saw that spark of a love of Israel, and a love of the land of Israel, and a love of this time. And the truth is that there's both kinds of soldierings. There's our lower, baser part of who we are, each single one of us. And yeah, we look in the wrong place. And yeah, we want to just watch sports or just relax or shop at Super Target just to feed the body a little bit. And that's understandable. And the Torah gives you a pathway to keep that kosher. And then there's the higher self. The higher self. And that higher self is what the Or HaChaim HaKadosh is talking about. You got those holy eyes. And you can bring up those sparks. Make them part of something greater, something bigger. So that's thing number one that I wanted to talk to you. And I guess I think it's also a little bit humorous to walk into the Super Target and just say, you know, and to walk in and say, to quote Jerry Maguire, "Who's coming with me? Who is coming with me?" It's a little bit funny, but I actually do it. And I smile inwardly. I say, "Who's coming with me?" And speaking of who's coming with me, there's another very, very hidden, and that's the hidden message of this week's Torah portion. It's got so many deep and hidden messages in the law. And there's the famous commandment of shooing away the mother bird. If you're going to take the eggs, you walk in on the path, you see a mother bird, and she's protecting her young, her eggs, or her little chicks. And if you want to take those chicks or those eggs, you got to shoo away the mother bird. You got to shoo away the mother bird. And my mother always explains the meaning of this as really being about environmentalism and about recycling and about, renewable energy. Don't take the mother, Because that one would have thought, there's two aspects. One could have thought that you would have just taken the chicks running from the mother. That would have been cruel. But another element is don't take the mother also. Because maybe she'll lay more eggs. Let the world rejuvenate and renew itself. You just take the eggs. But when I was younger and I was working in Aliyah, and I'm still working in trying to promote Aliyah for you, I used to use this verse for myself, and I used to say what this means is take the younger generation. Shoo away the parents, because the parents are always going to be stopping the children from going to the land of Israel. Shoo them away and just grab the chicks and the eggs and bring them to the land of Israel as well. And I used to never tell that to people, that that's what I think about this verse, until I literally found that very explanation in the Bala Turim. And he cross-references the word teshalach in the Song of the Sea. And he basically says, look, you shoot away, God, you shoot away a whole generation, the generation of the desert, and help them, kind of made them die in the desert so that you could bring in the eggs and the chicks, the next generation into the land of Israel. So I couldn't believe it, that thought that I had about this verse is exactly what the Bala Turim saw as well. And again, I guess there's a theme here, my friends, which is, you know, shoo away a certain old part of yourself, right? Shoo away a part of yourself that's keeping you down and slow and old, right? And I don't care what age you are, but there's an old part in all of us, right? Shoo that part away so that let your younger side come in to the opportunity. Don't get stuck. Don't get stuck. And certainly don't let your society or your parents slow you down when it comes to the land of Israel or whatever it is. And I'm talking about parents. I'm talking to parents and grandparents on the show as well. But most important is don't let that older generation of yourself, that kind of like oldness in yourself, be a stumbling block and keep you from moving on, right? So again, you know, the first thing that we learned is that you got to have holy eyes. You got to raise up that materialism, see the sparks that can be used for something greater. Then don't let yourself be blocked up by a mother bird, whatever that mother bird is. It could be it's most likely yourself. It's most likely some instinct of yours, some self-defense preservation instinct, some fear. Let's be real about it. Some fear that's keeping you down. Don't shoo that away. You got to know how to shoo that away. It's incredibly important to be able to shoo away the fears that we all have. By the way, the Torah portion does also once again mentions the mitzvah of tzitzit, and the verse is in 22:12. It says, "You shall make for yourselves twisted threads in the four corners of your garment with which to cover yourself." And again, I recommend you check out the Tchelet website, which is one of the sponsors of the show. And also, by the way, speaking of sponsors of the show, I want you to check out the great website, jbrick.com, for very cool Jewish-themed Lego, including the Aron Kodesh, the Holy Ark, the Ark of the Testament. Here, I'm looking at it right now. It's $54. It has a rabbi minifig. The rabbi conspicuously looks like a Chabadnik. And it's a beautiful Aron Kodesh. And it's just a fabulous set, and it's got the letters of the Ten Commandments. And my friend Yitzi from JBrick has created this, and I just think it's a very beautiful website and stuff, including, oh, here's a sukkah and a boy holding a lulav and etrog for $30. It's so cute. It's just the greatest little creation. And I really find it really to be a lot of fun. JBrick.com. Of course, the best sponsor of them all is the Land of Israel Network. And folks, I want to tell you something. You got to go out there and promote the Land of Israel Network. You got to get one other person. That's your job for this week. One other person, you got to hook them on to the Land of Israel Network. This is within the two explanations, the Torah explanations that I gave, which is, you know, see that a podcast and the phones and all that, there's a lot of materialism in there. Get people to be hooked on some holiness. Hooked on holiness. What do you think about that? Hooked on holiness. I'm like, remember Hooked on Phonics? You're like, Hooked on Holiness. I like that a lot. So I really want you to be hooked on it and find somebody else to be hooked on it. Speaking of being hooked on it, write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. I have a lot of emails to read on the show. I hopefully will do it next week. I haven't done it, I know, but I shall. Indeed, I shall. Okay, one more piece of Torah, and then we're going to get to vacationing in Israel, which I think is very important. And that is the very end of the Torah portion. It says, Zachor et asher asalecha Amalek bederech betzetchem mimitzrayim. Remember what Amalek, this bizarro anti-Jewish nation, did to you on the way when you were leaving Egypt, that he happened upon you on the way, and he struck those of you who were hindmost, all the weaklings at your rear when you were faint and exhausted, and he did not fear God. It shall be that when Hashem your God gives you rest from all your enemies all around in the land that Hashem your God gives to you as an inheritance to possess it, you shall wipe out the memory of Amalek from under the heaven. You shall not forget. And ladies and gentlemen, I am reading a book about the Warsaw Ghetto and the effort that the Amalekites of today went to, the great trouble that they went to try to kill every single Jew, the madness by which Hitler and Himmler, Yimach Shemam, may their memories and their names be blotted out, the lengths that they went to kill every single Jew, goes to show you what a value every single Jew has. And the divisions that you saw in the Warsaw Ghetto between Jews shows you what a mistake that is. And if we can't unite at a time of super, super existential danger and hate against us, we're going to have a harder time uniting in a time like this where there's so much blessing. But that is what we have to do. We have to unite and love one another and see the value in one another so much. And this Amalek, one of his main concerns is that he wants to stop the Jewish people from coming to the land of Israel. He wants to stop the Jewish people from coming home to the land of Israel. And basically, as the Jewish people are kind of approaching the land of Israel to receive the Torah, and then from the Sinai Desert to the land of Israel, Amalek strikes. He realizes that nobody else, not Egypt, nobody else is going to stop the Jewish people. So he himself shows his ugly face, because there's always a deep Amalek. Like have you heard this expression, deep state? Like there's like a state within a state here in this world of ours. There's also a deep Amalek, and it wants to stop us all the time. And we really see it today. In one sense, it has gone into hiding because it now hides itself behind the veneer of human rights, etc., social justice, all these memes. They are nothing but hateful, spiteful Amalekites. And they are just posing. They're posers, they're fakers. Amalek was like that also until he saw that the Jewish people were going into the land of Israel, so he himself came out to attack them. By the way, the next Torah portion is immediately, the words are, V'hayaki tavo el ha'aretz, it shall be when you enter the land of Israel. And there's a great connection, the Baal Turim talks about it, between coming to the land of Israel and the destruction of Amalek. Only in the land of Israel can we destroy Amalek. Only when we are ingathered into this land. And that's why, friends, Amalek is doing everything it can to stop the Jewish people from coming home. And therefore, those fears and those dark energies that you have when you consider moving to the land of Israel, living here, connecting to the land of Israel, it is Amalek. It is an energy of Amalek that wants to stop you from connecting, being plugged in. Even if you feel like you're in a rush to listen to one of the shows on the Land of Israel Network and you don't have time, I'm going to say something maybe a bit bombastic. There's a little bit of Amalek trying to stop you from connecting to holiness and to the land of Israel. Speaking of connecting to the land of Israel, I want to jump to the next topic, and that topic is vacationing the land of Israel. Last week, I didn't do a show, and you know what? I'm not sorry, because I needed to vacation a little bit. But there is nothing better than actually vacationing in the land. And first, I want to tell you that the first place I went was the first place that Abraham went, the first place that Joshua and the children of Israel went after Jericho, when they actually entered the land of Israel fully. They came to Shechem, to Shechem, to also known by the Arabs as Neapolis, or Nablus, they call it. It's Neapolis, which is Neopolis, new city in Roman. And I went to stay at my good friend Natan and Karen's house. And it was so great because Natan has been listening to my show for years. And we've been connected for many years. And I visited him in New York City. And now I went to visit him in his new place in the land of Israel. And no less did he come to the land of Israel than he came right to Alon Moreh. He's the first new Olé from the West. Maybe there's a few Frenchies or Russians, but from United States right to Alon Moreh. And they just made a humongous event for him to come to the land when he came to. They met him at the airport. They met him at a house. They stocked the food. It's just really incredible. And it was such an honor to be with my buddy, his wife, his wonderful children in Alon Moreh to start my vacation there, to look out into the mountain of Eval and the mountain of Grizim. It was just fabulous. And I, in the morning, I stayed two nights because I was so chutzpah. I said, Natan, can I stay here another night? We stayed Saturday night. Sunday early in the morning, I got up. I will never forget this. I walked up to the top of a beautiful mountain called Har Kabir, Mount Kabir, like powerful mountain, huge mountain. And I saw the sunrise exactly over the valley, the Tirzah Valley, where the Jewish people came into the land of Israel from the Jordan Valley when they crossed over from Jericho. And the Torah describes it the way of the rising sun. And I saw the rising sun rising over that valley. It was just fabulous. I peered over to the tomb of Joseph, towards the tomb of Joseph, and I prayed for the tomb of Joseph in Shechem. Then after that, I went to see our good friends, our Gentile friends, who have become settlers in the land of Israel. And I'm talking about the Hayovel organization and the volunteers who come, the Christian volunteers who come to till the land and to pick the vines of Judea and Samaria to make Jewish wine in the land of Israel and to fulfill biblical prophecy. I got to see the Waller folks and all of their amazing volunteers and to address them a little bit. Malka did as well, and to see their beautiful community right next to Har Bracha in Samaria. Right, Har Bracha is Har Grizim, the Mount of Gerizim, and check out Hayovel, Hayovel, to connect with them. If you're not Jewish and you're listening to the show, you got to come on a Hayovel tour, a working tour. Believe me, you're going to be getting up at 4 in the morning to work the fields of Samaria, and you will love every minute of it. From there, Malk and I went, and the kids, we went for 2 days in Netanya. The beach at Netanya is just emerald and gorgeous and awesome. We ate fabulous kosher food at a little hotel motel right across from the sea, from the Mediterranean. We were there for 2 days, and it was stellar. We went to the big square that they have there called the Independence Square, which had totally, you know, happening stuff every night for kids. It was just fabulous, and there was a trinket that my little daughter, my 9-year-old daughter, wanted to buy. And I said to her, I didn't want her to buy another trinket because of materialism. So I said to her, you know what? You can go buy that trinket. It's 15 shekel. But the one thing I want is that you haggle it down to 15 shekel. And she did it, and she was proud. And I taught my daughter how to haggle in the land of Israel. You see, I turned that trinket into an educational tool. And indeed, she haggled it down. And she remembers the haggling more than the ring itself. Next day, we went to the fabulous Beit Shearim, a necropolis. I like that word, necropolis, which means like city of the dead, right? So this is where Yehuda Hanasi, the redactor of the Mishnah, of really the oral law of the Jewish people, the kind of verbal, all the legal body, the corpus of Jewish law. He was the first redactor of it. And we had a fabulous time seeing these amazing sarcophagi and these beautiful caves. And very weirdly, there were Arabs who were posing for wedding pictures next to these sarcophagi. And I thought to myself, get your own necropolis. Anyway, so we were there. And then from there, I went to see my good friends, Zev and Annie and their kids, where they invited us to stay with them in a beautiful town called Yavniel, God Shall Build. And that's in the north, next to the Kinneret, above Menachemia or Menachemia. I don't know how you say that in English talk. But in any case, Jordan River below us, the beautiful Kinneret, Sea of the Galilee, a little to the north of us, amazing fields. And my good friend Zev and I went into the mountains, found an incredible mikveh, an incredible kind of pool of water in a cave in the mountains above the Kinneret, above the Sea of Galilee. We hiked there. There was no markings. We just heard about it. We dunked, and it was just, it was heaven on earth. And I want to say about heaven on earth that I am always asking God, I'm always praying to God for two things. Teach me more Torah and show me more of the land of Israel. Teach me more Torah and show me more of the land of Israel. That is what I pray to you, God, so much. And thank you so much for letting me vacation in a way that is no regrets. I didn't go to Florida. I didn't go to Deal. I didn't go to Greece. Although all those places are great, and maybe I'll visit every single one of those places. But to vacation with my family in the land of Israel, to learn more about it, it's as sweet as honey, milk and honey, to just immerse yourself in the love of this land was really a true gift. And nothing is going to stop us. No Amalekites are going to stop us, ladies and gentlemen. No Amalekites are going to stop us. No Amalekite is going to stop you, right? Show me the money, right? Remember that from Jerry Maguire? He says, don't say show you the money. Show me the money. I could say about me, you know, no Amalek is going to stop me. You got to say no Amalek is going to stop me from connecting to the land of Israel, from vacationing in the land of Israel, from overcoming my own fears and using all the materialism and other desires that we have only for good, to procreate, to build, to be strong, to teach, and to connect. All right, folks, we're going to take we're going to shift gears now. You are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show. I want to thank you so much. Please go to thelandofisrael.com, hit the donate button, be part of our network, give us a little bit of your blood, sweat, and tears by giving us a little bit of your money to help us make more great shows here. So donate and give. Thank you so much to all those that do, including my good friends out in Switzerland and my good friends out in Brooklyn, all the folks that really make this show happen. Thank you. And Phoenix, thank you so, so much. Also, check out YishaiFleischer.com, all the stuff that we do there, the videos and articles and the radio show, of course. Check out that page as well and connect with me. It's easy to connect with me. I look up Yishai Fleischer, at Yishai Fleischer, at Twitter, etc., and all these other things, Facebook, of course. And you can write me an email, Yishai@thelandofisrael.network. Yishai@thelandofisrael.com, that's the network email. In any case, we're going to shift gears now and go to our talk with lawyer Mark Zell in his fight against lawfare, nefarious lawfare against Israel, trying to blacken Israel's name, but we and Mark Zell won't let it. So here we go. Stay tuned, and we'll be broadcasting to you. God bless you. Stay tuned. Stay strong. And here we go. Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are. I was just in a law office, the law offices of Zell, Aaron, and Co. I was dealing some of my private personal business. Yes, I have a life outside of talking with you. I have my own little life that I'm trying to lead here in the land of Israel and make things happen. And sometimes you need the services of good lawyers. And that's my lawyer, Richard Aaron. And right next door to him is his partner, or he's the senior partner, I guess, Mark Zell, who's also somebody who represents causes from time to time, international causes of people like ourselves who stand for the right of the Jewish people in the land of Israel. His official title is that he's an Israeli-American lawyer and the co-chairman of Republicans Overseas Israel, and also vice president of Republicans Overseas Inc. And in front of me, Mark Zell, is a case called United States District Court for the District of Columbia, Bassem Al-Tamimi versus Sheldon Adelson and the United States of America as defendants. This is a pretty bombastic title for a case. Bassem Al-Tamimi versus Sheldon Adelson and the U.S. of A. Mark, please explain to me, what am I looking at here?
Well, it gets more bombastic than that, Yishai. First of all, shalom.
Shalom, and thank you so much for welcoming. You know what? Maybe I'll take one more second, Mark.
Take it. Describe it.
First thing, we're standing here in one of the central buildings in Jerusalem. It's called the City Tower, and Migdal Ha'ir, and it's the big white kind of tall building in the center of town. I'm looking out the window. I'm looking at you. Behind you is a picture of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and who is that? Louis Brandeis? Who is that?
Somebody like that.
Somebody like that. Okay, an important
jurist.
Jurist, okay. And I'm looking out at the new building of Jerusalem. I move a little, my head a little left. I see the Mount of Olives. I see where I live. And then I see the Temple Mount. And I see a flowering, beautiful, happening, reborn Jerusalem, which you couldn't have seen. 150 years ago, there was none of this except for the old city. And your office is here. And I know that you yourself, not only are you in the center of the world, but you yourself at the center of many of the things around here that are being built, that are being fought for the rights of the Jewish people in the land of Israel. And that, and so this is pretty bombastic what's behind you here, right?
That's a pretty bombastic introduction. But that's, let me get it described for our listeners the case. This is a case, you mentioned Tamimi and Adelson. Well, Tamimi is only one of dozens of Palestinian Arab plaintiffs and a few village councils in Judea and Samaria, plus 49 defendants. Sheldon Adelson is just the first of the list. And these defendants, I represent six of them. Now, the defendants in this case fall into basically four categories. The first are donors like Sheldon Adelson and Chaim Saban and Norman Brayman and others, the late Irving Moskowitz, who was the founder of the community I think you were living in and on the Mount of Olives. And they were sued because they give money to charitable and humanitarian causes for recipients over the Green Line, where I live, and many, about a half a million other Jews or more live. And then another group of defendants are the NGOs, non-governmental organizations, principally all nonprofits. Those are, six of them are my clients, like the Gush Etzion Foundation and the Friends of Ariel and the Hebron Fund. I think, Isha, you're a speaker for the Hebron community. And the Christian Friends of Israeli Communities and the Old Panah and Ofra and the Honenu organization. These are all clients of ours, of mine, who were sued along with several others, the other 48 defendants in this case. Another single defendant was Elliot Abrams, who was the Deputy National Security Advisor in the Bush administration. He was sued in his individual capacity, and later he was substituted by the United States government that took up his case, and that's why the U.S. of A is a defendant in the case. And then the last group are commercial companies and banks and manufacturers like Motorola, Bank Leumi, Bank Hapoalim, various automobile manufacturers that all have business activities in Judea and Samaria. And they were sued, all of us were sued, because for $1 billion, originally it was $40 billion, then they cut it back generously to $1 billion, because of damages that we allegedly caused, all of us allegedly caused to the Palestinian plaintiffs, because we were engaged in a campaign, according to the complaint, of genocide and violating international law and crimes against humanity, just because we're Jewish people living in the Jewish homeland. I mean, that was the essence of the complaint. About a day and a half ago, Judge Tanya Chutkan of the United States District Court for the District of Columbia, finally, after this case has been pending for over a year and a half, issued her decision dismissing the case, throwing it out with prejudice on the grounds that the court had no jurisdiction to hear it. And what she said was, specifically, she had no jurisdiction because all of these issues that were very inartfully raised in this amended complaint were political questions that were not appropriate for judicial resolution. If they're going to be resolved, they need to be resolved by the political branches, either the legislature or the executive branch, through diplomatic channels or whatever it happens to be, but certainly not the courts. So that was the major decision yesterday. This case was just one of a series of lawfare cases.
And that's the word I wanted to throw out there, lawfare. And lawfare dovetails with something I'm working on all the time, which is called narrative warfare, which basically, if you look at the complaint here, you could have guessed, and I remember when we were in discussions, I don't know, half a year ago, I said, and other people said, and you said yourself, obviously, the likelihood is that this case is going to get thrown out because it's bombastic. It's kind of audacious.
Political question.
Right. That's right. And it's also kind of ridiculous. But that wasn't the sole purpose of it, right?
No, that's right. This is the bringing of lawsuits is a weapon. That's why we call it lawfare, like warfare using law cases to attack Israel, attack the legitimacy of Israel and as a state, or the presence of Jews in Judea and Samaria, whatever it happens to be. It's part of the BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions campaign that anti-Semites led by the Palestinian Arabs and, unfortunately, a few, not a few, very extreme left-wing Jews who are out to tarnish and besmirch the Jewish state.
So given that the efforts to destroy Israel outright in the last 70 years of Israel's existence have failed, the new general tactic is to besmirch Israel's name and to squeeze it economically and to squeeze it politically and to squeeze it especially in the minds of people and especially young people in the future. That is where the attack has been. One of those avenues in order to reach that has been lawfare.
Right. Well, I mean, I think you're right. Look, the Arabs have been trying for the better part of 100 years to destroy the Jewish state, even before there was a Jewish state, through violence and later through warfare, you know, military, conventional warfare. They failed. Around the same time, they decided to try to undermine the viability of the Jewish state through economic sanctions, through the Arab League boycott, for example, which has been in effect since 1946. So that's not new. But but what is relatively new in the last decade or two has been, as you say, this campaign to destroy the image of Israel in the minds of people around the world, many of them well-meaning and well-intentioned people, and especially young people. It's not in the future, Isha, it's here. College campuses all over the United States, and not only the United States, in Australia and England, around the world, college students, many of them are Jewish students, are being bombarded with this false narrative about Israel, which they try to reinforce these lies, this fake narrative, we have to call it, through these kinds of law cases, just by filing a law case like this one. And this is just one of several. Okay, where the allegations, where the narrative are just so outrageous. But there they are in black and white print. Now, they may get thrown out of court like they did in our case, but they can always go back and point to the complaints that were filed and say that they got a raw deal in the courts, but here are the facts.
Right, right. And you said the word fake narrative. I'll add to that fake history. And also fake news. And this is kind of the newer version of the term that I came up with, which is narrative warfare. Just now, the Secretary General of the United Nations was here in Israel. He laid a wreath, Yad Vashem, etc. And I was pondering the United Nations for a second. And I had a tremendous realization. There's basically three organizations within the UN, sub-organizations, agencies, that have their different parts in anti-Israel work. One is UNESCO. UNESCO equals there was no Jewish history here, no important Jewish history, no ancient Jewish history. The second one is UNRWA, which makes sure that there's a continuing flow of Palestinian refugees, that they continue to exist and not be repatriated, and they also get, they themselves educate towards jihadist Nakba, BDS type thinking. So they ensure that there's Palestinian refugees, fund them, and teach them, creating a real reality on the ground of these motivated anti-Israel folks. And then you also have a Human Rights Commission. And that Human Rights Commission says, you have no history, there's this problem on the ground, and now we're condemning you for it, for being occupiers and for being abusers. And so he's laying a wreath at the feet, at Yad Vashem there, remembering the 6 million, and yet that organization is heavily involved in a creation of fake history, fake reality, and then fake condemnation. And so I thought to myself, well, you know.
Well, look, I couldn't agree with you more. I think this Secretary General is making a bona fide effort to reach out to Israel and try to undo some of the humongous harm that's been caused by the UN over the years, really since its founding. where Israel is condemned more than any other nation on the planet. And you're talking about countries and societies who have a history of tyranny and gross violation of human rights. Some of them not only sit on the Human Rights Commission, but also chair it. I mean, people, countries like Saudi Arabia and so on, who oppress their own citizens and have done for decades. One of the things that we tried to do in this case that we're talking about, Yishai, is state the narrative of the Jewish people for Judea and Samaria. Why was it that I, basically on a pro bono basis, undertook to represent all of these NGOs, these nonprofit organizations supporting Jewish life in Judea and Samaria, is because we wanted to put on the record our version of history.
And you basically wanted to take their attack and use it against to our narrative advantage.
That's right.
To posit our story.
Now, what happened in this particular case, the specific case is the judge, in order to get rid of all the, you know, to make it simple, forced all of the defendants, in my view, improperly, to file a single joint motion. But even there, we prevailed upon the other lawyers, including Sheldon Adelson's lawyer, who's quoted in today's Yisrael Hayom, to include a very lengthy footnote that was just relating to our narrative. I mean, we don't agree to call Judea and Samaria occupied Palestinian territories. We don't like calling ourselves being called settlers, and et cetera, et cetera. Not only we object to the nomenclature, but we object to the entire presentation of the facts, the historical facts. Now, if this case, as I expect it will be, is appealed to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, probably the second most prestigious court in the United States, we will then have an opportunity to submit our own brief. Mm-hmm. And in this brief, it will be the primary function of this brief is to tell our story, the real story of Jewish connection to the land of Israel, and specifically the Jewish connection to Judea, Samaria, and the rest of the land. So that which is gets lost in all of this BDS law warfare garbage.
Mark Zell is an Israeli-American lawyer and the chairman of Republicans Oversees Israel and the vice president of Republicans Oversees Inc. What is Republicans Oversees Inc.? What does that mean?
Well, the Republican Party, Yishai, has a an organization which I'm the vice president of that works with and represents some 9 million American expatriates around the world, mm-hmm. all over the globe. Our chapter in Israel, Republicans Oversees Israel, is just one of those chapters. We happen to be probably one of the most successful chapters. We have more voters who actually vote here probably than any place on the planet, even though we're not necessarily the largest population of expatriates. Maybe we're 4 or 5 in the world. But we're very, very active, and we were very active in this last campaign. We supported the election of President Trump by some 80% here. And that's been noticed by the Republican National Committee and the White House. And so, therefore, we've had a very positive and I think, constructive dialogue with the current administration about many of the issues that are important to us here in Israel and to the Jewish people around the world. And we expressing a point of view that most Americans don't hear, because the Jewish community in the United States, as you know, votes exactly the opposite. You know, 80% for the Democrats and Hillary Clinton and so on, and they're behind a lot of the misinformation that's coming out now in the United States about the president and his administration.
Well, the president of the United States has his issues in America, but I'm not going to deal with that because that does not interest me.
Okay.
When groups ask me about Trump, I'll give my one answer or two answers. But by the second or third time, I start telling them, hey, listen, we're Zionists. We represent the state of Israel. We're about building this country. We're about, you know, our independence, and with no prejudice against, but, you know, this is about Israel. On the other hand, though, people have impressed upon me, and I think it's correct, that the United States, at the end of the day, does have a lot of impact on policies, especially dealing with the issues that we talked about in this case that you represented,
right,
which is the issues of Judea and Samaria, the quote-unquote West Bank. And there's a few things coming out, a few different signals. You know, certainly we have seen that since the Trump administration has taken power, when Israel has announced any building in Judea and Samaria and eastern Jerusalem, there has been nothing said. Meaning to say, that in itself has been a sea change and a different atmosphere altogether. There's just no boo when we say that we want to build, you know, in our natural ancestral homeland. At the same time, there's these contra messages that sometimes come out. A few days ago, front page of, again, Israel Hayom was that Kushner and company are promising some kind of outline of a peace plan within 4 months. Then we heard recently that $300 million is going to be paid out to the United Nations Relief Works Organization, which is the UNRWA, which is basically a pro-jihadist, a jihadist educational...
principal incitor of violence.
Principal incitor of violence, very well said. And so we get these messages, and then you have some people in the administration which are like, wow, these are strong pro-Israel folks. For example, the Ambassador Friedman. But then you have other people who, well, there's a question mark about they may very well have that State Department mentality that has been so popular in the United States for so long. So what animal are we really dealing with, Mark?
Well, it's a multifaceted animal. Okay, I'll have to say that. First of all, I think the president's heart and mind are solidly with Israel and the Jewish people. I don't think there's any question about it. It's been an attempt in recent weeks. In fact, from the very throughout the campaign and afterwards to brand him as an anti-Semite and a neo-Nazi and a white supremacist and all that, that's just a whole bunch of malarkey that's simply not true. When it comes to Israel, though, your questions, I think, are very
important. I just want to
go ahead.
What's the word I'm looking for here? I want to back that up by telling you that I have spoken to many wealthy business-type Jews in the tri-state New York metropolitan area who know Trump for a long time and have been doing business with him. That's my friends in the Syrian community. That's other friends of mine that have been in similar businesses. And they know the man. He's a New Yorker, and his reputation and his, they've done business with him, and you know it's been across the board that these accusations to my friends that actually know the man say these accusations are all, as you say, malarkey or hogwash.
Yeah, okay, but he's used to that. You know, the president has very thick skin, and it doesn't deter him in any way. And we here are backing him up. On the policy side, though, there is some ambivalence. I mean, the president himself, I think, is very clear. On the other hand, his first 8 months in office were very interesting. He probably has done more in that period of time than any other president beforehand, and just in terms of changing the order of the day and making America great again, as he says. I mean, he's done that, and he's doing that. He's doing it in the United States internally and around the world. Here in Israel, as you've pointed out, he's been very fair. He's kept his promise to respect Israel's decision about her own future, issues that directly affect her national security, like Judea and Samaria, like the Iran situation, the Iranian threat, like ISIS. I mean, this president is doing really good things. And there's some areas where we've been, I won't say disappointed, mostly by the timing more than anything else. The embassy has not yet moved to Jerusalem. That was something the president promised to do. In fact, he was about to do it in the very first week in office. But other voices reached him and persuaded him to postpone that decision. I think we're still going to see that moving in 6 months to a year. I think you mentioned Jared Kushner and Greenblatt's peace mission here. It's probably the fifth visit that they've made, or at least Greenblatt has made, to the area in order to feel out the various parties about a deal with the Palestinian Arabs. I think they must know that no such deal is very likely, and the principal reason is that the Arab side just are not ready for it. I mean, they benefit from the current chaotic situation. It keeps them in power, keeps money flowing into their public and private coffers, and keeps the refugee issue alive in Gaza, which is under his responsibility. I don't know what the Palestinian Arabs would do if they ever actually got peace. I don't think that's likely. Okay.
Let me just, it's important for me to say, I'm speaking in my voice now, not in yours, which is they may be the reason that we don't have a peace deal, but what I represent, the people I represent, we're also 100% against any kind of two-state solution, any kind of sovereignty
on this land. Important point you mentioned, Yishai. I mean, you notice that this administration has backed off the two-state solution idea.
Right.
Okay, now I'm not saying that they're not discounting the possibility, but what they are saying, and God bless them for it, is that that is not the only possible resolution of this conflict. That was, by the way, something we worked very hard with during the campaign with David Friedman and the Trump team, Republican National Committee, to get a radical change in the Republican Party platform where we eliminated that cliched phrase, two-state solution, and opened up the possibility for real peace on real terms and recognizing the reality of the moment, not some kind of sloganeering. And so that's important. This president has shown that he's continuing with that line. Even the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, who's not very familiar with Israel and doesn't have a real history with us, his own spokesperson the other day in a press conference deliberately backed off that issue when specifically asked about it by a Palestinian journalist. So I think that that's a really important thing. The other thing that's going on with this peace mission, you have to see it in a broader context. Is it that the Jared Kushner and the president really are after, for its own benefit, a peace deal with the Palestinian Arabs? In my view, that's not the case. That has to be seen in a broader geopolitical context. The president has bought Prime Minister Netanyahu's basic strategy about confronting Iran. Iran is the principal threat to peace, not only to Israel, but to most all of the civilized states in this region. And in order to confront Iran, we need a coalition not only that includes Israel, it includes the Sunni Muslim states that are opposed to the Iranian aggression. They're trying to, you know, establish their control from Tehran to the Mediterranean Sea. And by the way, they're succeeding.
Right. I was going to say we could talk about coalitions, but in fact, they have taken Iraq. They have taken South.
They've taken parts of Iraq. Okay,
right. large swaths
yes,
of Iraq,
South
they
Iraq.
Have,
yeah.
They have eroded all the way into Syria. Their allies. They have Hezbollah. They have Hamas.
That's right.
And they have the Houthis in Yemen. So
Then the Iranians are playing. They invented the game of chess, and they're playing a very good game of geopolitical chess at the moment. But this administration is opposed to that, unlike the previous one, which was kowtowing to them. This administration is trying to confront it. And the way you confront it is to build this coalition. And the way and what you need to do to build the coalition on practical terms, you have to show they're not democracies, but they have a street. They have the Arab street. And we've seen in the past few years what that street can do, even in non-democratic Arab states. So they need to be – they're wary of that. And this is where the Palestinian-Arab-Israeli discussions come in. They need to be able to show their publics that Israel is making a genuine effort, okay, and the United States is trying to bring an effort to bring about some kind of accommodation between the Israelis and the Palestinians. After decades of these same countries inflaming their public opinions against Israel because of the Palestinians. So this is why this whole discussion becomes important. It's not for its own sake, but for its geopolitical significance in this coalition building, which is essential to the survival of the region. Otherwise, Iran will not only control the landmass from Central Asia all the way to the Mediterranean Sea, but will have nuclear weapons to back it up.
Makes a lot of sense. I can buy that. But I would say, you know, if I had an impact on this policy, I would say the real best way to garner a coalition is not to give in to the demands of the
neo-terrorists. I agree with you, okay, on that. And I strongly believe that the President Trump and his delegation over here also believes that. I mean, I'm not speaking for them. This is my own personal view. But I think they need to try. They need to try. But we shouldn't accommodate the Palestinians at all costs, because the Palestinians have nothing, they desire nothing but the destruction of our Jewish state, not only just in Judea and Samaria, but from Haifa, Tel Aviv, and Beersheba, Jerusalem. So we understand that, and we need to take that into account. But at the same time, we need to play sensible, you know, forward-looking politics, and we need to play it in the correct way, And I believe that's what's going on right now.
Mark, thank you so much for all of your time. I have one final question for you.
Sure.
And we're speaking with Mark Sell, who's an international lawyer, an Israeli-American lawyer, chairman of Republican Overseas Israel, vice president of the company called Republicans Overseas, and represented Chevron and many other defendants in a giant case that just got thrown out, a lawfare case that just got thrown out of the District Court of Columbia. We're looking forward to a appeal and play another round of this game.
Well, we got to make clear that we won this case. I mean, we're the defendants, so we got thrown. The fact it was thrown out is a big victory.
Absolutely.
We're looking forward to the appeal, only to smash them again.
Very good. Well said.
Yeah.
The only last question I have for you really is just about yourself. Here we are in your office in Jerusalem, overlooking beautifully being built Jerusalem, in the process of being built and rebuilt. But your mannerisms, the plaques on the walls, including your education in Princeton, etc. You would think that here's an American Jew, and yet you're one of these people who maybe culturally, linguistically, seemingly, I would have guessed would have been an American Jew, and yet no, you switched over to this side of the pond. I just wanted to ask you about that today. Like, what makes a person like you, as opposed to the guy sitting next to you at Princeton at the desk, who's like you, choose this life here?
Well, Ishai, look, I've been here over 30 years, and I came principally because of my children. I then had six. I now have 8 children, 15 grandchildren, thank God, and maybe another one coming soon. We came here for them, and we came here for them because I couldn't think of, here we are living at a time when, as a Jew, we have a Jewish state, the first time in 2,000 years, and opportunity to come and to be part of that thing, and to raise our children in that environment, okay, as proud Jews working for the betterment of the Jewish state and the Jewish people. My wife and I just couldn't conceive of the possibility of not at least trying to be part of that incredible experiment. And here we are, 30 years later, and our kids are all here, and the grandchildren are all here in Israel and growing up and speaking Hebrew and serving in the army in Shirut Lumi and making a reality of the dream that we had, and for that generations of our families and our relatives and millions of Jews over the last 2,000 years dreamt of this possibility. Here it's coming to life. You just described this view of Jerusalem from our office here, which is just amazing. And wherever you go in Israel, every day you get up and it's one miracle after the next. Yeah, we have our problems. But this country, what it's doing, what people are doing all over Israel, from north to south, east to west, this tiny little place affecting the world and changing the humanity for the better. I mean, despite all of our enemies and all the attempts, like in our case that we talked about, to destroy us and to destroy our good name and legitimacy, we are going forward in science, in medicine, in art, in religion, in economy. I mean, where isn't Israel making its mark on this planet? Okay, I'm delighted. I'm proud to be part of that, and I'm proud that my kids are part of that. And I hope, well, maybe somebody listening to this show, maybe they want to be part of it too. It isn't easy, but it is the rewards. Far outweigh any of the detriments. It's a fantastic opportunity. It's the opportunity of a lifetime.
Indeed it is. Mark Sell, thank you so much for letting me hang out with you here in your office. You're busy. You're an Israeli-American lawyer, the chairman of the Republicans Overseas Israel, vice president of Republicans Overseas. Just won a court case, a big court case, by getting it thrown out of the District Court of Columbia, of a big lawfare case against Israel and my own organization, the organization I work for, Hebron Fund, and many other good folks. It was really fun to actually be in the room with all the defendants, because it was like being with all the good people and all the good friends. Mark Sell, God bless you. Thank you so much. And indeed, I promise you, people will listen. And yes, there is people out there who want to come on.
Yishai, let's wish all of your listeners a Shana Tova Mituka, Shana of peace and success, and full of Jewish pride and achievement.
Shana Tova. Amen. All right, folks, I hope you enjoyed the show today. We talked about a lot of stuff. We talked about the hidden truths about the land of Israel hidden in our Torah portion. And we're going to overcome our fear. We're going to overcome our materialism. And we're going to connect with the land of Israel. We're going to, of course, overcome Amalek. That is our duty. That's number one. Then we talked a little bit about vacationing in the land of Israel and falling in love with the land of Israel and no guilt. And finding its the secrets and praying to God and asking for us to learn the depths of the Torah and to see the secrets of the land of Israel, to see the beauty of the land of Israel. Thank you, God, for that opportunity to vacation with the family in the land of Israel. And then we spoke with lawyer Mark Zell about him fighting the Amalekites at the efforts of the haters, the jihadists, the narrative warriors, and the fake newsers out there to blacken Israel's name. That was a great talk. And his own inspirational life here in the land of Israel. And before we go, I do want to remind you that we have great sponsors of the show, Tchelet, T-E-K-H-E-L-E-T.com. In this week's Torah portion, we learned about the mitzvah of tzitzit. Don't forget about the mitzvah of tzitzit. And get those blue strings, because it's not just about a blue string and fulfilling the Torah commandment. It's actually about returning to the land of Israel. It's about revelation. It's about renewal. It's about redemption, and it, I wear it, I live it, and that's why I'm proud to have Tchelet as a sponsor. And I love also my good friend, my good friends at jbrick.com. For example, you could get an Israeli soldier minifigure with a minifig Israeli Tavor gun, right, which is the new gun that the IDF is using. You put a little soldier, a female soldier or a male soldier Lego minifigure with the Tzahal logo emblazoned on this little minifigure with a Tavor gun, holding a little Tavor minifigure gun, you put that together on your desk, on your business desk, and everybody knows that you mean business. Am I right? So come on, my good friend Andy in Atlanta, I think you should definitely get yourself an Israeli minifigure of an Israeli soldier. It's just so cool. It's a great gift for yourself if you're like me, who is a grown-up who still likes to play with kid things, or for your kids as well. Check out also HebronFund.org. The brave community of Hebron keeps the fathers and the mothers accessible to you. Go on one of our weekly English tours, HebronFund.org, HebronFund.org. It's fabulous, and I'm very proud to work for Hebron, for the Jewish community of Hebron, and, of course, the Land of Israel Network. Check out our website, thelandofisrael.com. Please donate, be part of give us a little bit of your blood. Look at our videos. Check out Ari Abram, what's going up on the Temple Mount and getting arrested and getting muzzled there. Check out all the stuff that we do there. And we're going to be doing more and more of it with your help. So that's the Land of Israel Network, thelandofisrael.com. Of course, check out YishaiFleischer.com and connect to me on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, etc. And also on, not Snapchat. I don't do Snapchat. Maybe I should, but I don't. But I do, what's that called? Instagram. So check that out as well. And write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. And most important is that you stay connected and don't let anybody or anything disconnect you. Don't let anybody make you afraid. Don't let anybody blacken Israel's name. Don't let anybody cool off your fervor for the land of Israel. Just more and more. My good friend, Alone Arthur in Phoenix, told me that he did exactly what I recommended. He blew up a picture that he took at the Western Wall in Tisha B'Av on the 9th of Av, and it's sitting in his house. He sent me a WhatsApp picture of it, and it's fabulous. And that's the way to do it. Take a step and let that step lead you to yet another step. All right, folks, our time is done, but our connection is forever. So stay tuned, stay calm. Stay calm when it comes to the hard things, and stay fixated and hot when it comes to what we need to get done. Don't let the dark things cool you off, and keep staying hot and excited, and stay connected and stay tuned, and God bless you wherever you are. Let's rebroadcast the story of God, because He is always broadcasting. All we have to do is tune in. God bless you, and Shalom.
This week on Israel Inspired, how is the flooding in Texas affecting the Jewish community and Ari Abramowitz personally?
My entire house is destroyed and everything in it, but we're alive, we're safe, and that's what's most important. And we're coming together as a community to support each other.
Listen to Israel Inspired with Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.